Let me sound off in the beginning. We ain't losing, we back to winning. Hometown love, been repping from the start. Nothing but niners, red and gold in my heart. And we go hard when it's time to play. May have left Frisco, but ain't left the Bay. Kyle Shanahan time, can he bring us back to get our sixth ring? Imagine that. Light shine bright at Levi whenever it's game day. Take a hit from Bowman, calling it May Day. Eric Reed ball out, getting the picks. New year, Garcon going deep for six. Can't forget about Hyde when he toting the rock. While Robinson outside, keeping it locked. Had a lot of legends, time to make some new ones. Nothing but niners, haters come and get some. Yeah.
Listen to that intro. That shit is fire. Hey guys, what's up? It's your boy Nick and your boy Mike here over at Nothing But Niners. What's going on, Mike?
Not much, man. You liking that new intro, man?
Oh man, that shit is fire. And if you guys haven't heard it, listen to it again. Put it on replay because that shit is coming at you crazy, man. Crazy. How about a Nothing But Niners rap, bro?
Yeah, man, that's a game changer right there, man. No one, I'm not gonna go into it. That is great, man. Just awesome, man. Nick, you did good, man. Good job there.
Yeah, man. Hey, we are definitely bringing two definite things to you tonight that are new: a Nothing But Niners rap and a special guest that's never appeared on any other podcast anywhere, and we are bringing it to you here, Nothing But Niners tonight. But you're gonna have to tune in a little bit because he's not coming on for a little bit, so. But we'll get that person on, and you will be ecstatic. So let's bring it, Mike, man.
All right, yeah. So listen, guys, we have a couple of special announcements to make here. So we're gonna get this out of the way in the beginning. The Nothing But Niners team is putting together a trivia challenge for all faithfuls. Now, if you listen to the previous podcast, you've heard about it already. But I want to do this at the beginning of this one. Okay, we are going to set up a March Madness type bracket and have faithful squaring off against each other until there is one winner. It will be trivia questions on video. Okay, we're going to ask you guys to download Google Hangouts if you don't have it. And other than that, all you're going to need is a marker and a piece of paper. We will shoot questions at you guys. You write down your answer. Correct answers get you a point. And if it comes down to a tiebreaker, the faster answer will get it at the end of it all. Okay, we will keep tally. Everybody's going to get participation awards, so don't worry about, you know, you feel like, you know, what do I get for trying or whatever. Everyone's going to get a little something, but the winner is going to get a special gift, and my man Nick has been dying to tell you guys what that is.
Yeah, man. Man, this, look, like Mike said, all you got to have is a Google Hangouts account, a piece of paper, know how to write, tune in, and you can win this, man. And if you are the champion and crown the champion, you can win the grand prize of a 49ers jersey of your choice, brought to you by Nothing But Niners. So any player you want, want Foster, you want Thomas, whoever it is, we are going to ship that and send it to the overall champion for competing in the Nothing But Niners trivia and being the champion. Who wouldn't want to do that?
Bro, I think that deserves a round of applause. You get a freaking jersey of your choice for playing a game for a couple of minutes. Are you kidding? Man, look. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's it right there. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Keep it up. Make some noise. Make some noise,
boys and girls.
Nothing But Niners doing their damn thing, man. Like, guys, this is the place to be. We are going to take fan interaction to an all new level. So, guys, be on the lookout, okay? If you are interested in this, go to the website, nothingbutniners.com. Leave us a message there, okay? You can type in your Twitter handle, your email address, and say, I am interested in the 49ers trivia challenge, okay? However you want to word it, we'll know what you're talking about. Hit us up on Twitter, NothingButNineERS, NothingButNiners on Twitter. The email is NothingButNiners@gmail.com. And like I said, if you're confused, just go to the website, NothingButNiners.com. You can find our Twitter, our email. You can find a way to send us messages. It's all right there. There's no excuse. There's no charge for any of this. Guys, this is just to have a good time during the off season. All right, so spots are filling up quickly. We already have a couple of people who have said they want in. They're in, okay? So, guys, get ready and strap in because this is going to be a very fun ride. We are just getting started here at Nothing But Niners.
I just have one question for everybody. Do you have what it takes? That's all I ask. Do you have what it takes? Do you think you know those 49ers? Chime in. Bring it. Bring the heat.
I can't wait.
Because Nothing But Niners is bringing that fire, so you need to bring that heat back.
All right. And
we got to go into this, man.
Wait, no, not yet, not yet. Leave them anticipating, man. Hold on, wait a second. I got one more little announcement to make, okay? So since we've started the Nothing But Niners, since we've launched, every weekend we do like a roundtable discussion on YouTube. There is going to be a new format introduced, but what I want to say is we will not be broadcasting this weekend because this is Mother's Day weekend. A lot of people have plans on Saturday and even Sunday, so we will not be doing a YouTube broadcast this weekend. But next weekend, we will be back in full effect, and again, another special guest on the YouTube page. So you guys, I'm telling you, you're not going to want to miss a single thing from the Nothing But Niners crew. I mean, this is the place to be, guys, all right? So, Nick, I know you want us to go ahead and get started. Why don't you go ahead and kick us off with our first topic, man?
Hey, man, we got to talk about this Blaine Gabbert signing and the faithfuls losing their shit, man. We got to talk about it. Right? So,
do we?
Yeah, we do. We do.
Come on. Do you listen to me? Do you really care that Blaine Gabbert signed somewhere? Does it matter?
No, I mean, I personally don't care. I mean, he's a quarterback who's going to be playing backup, and guess what? He has to play against us. So if Carson Palmer goes down, we got a better chance of winning. I mean, it's Blaine freaking Gabbert. Come on.
Right, but so this is my thing, all right? Blaine Gabbert's not on the team anymore. Why are we talking about him? What does this have to do with the 49ers, Nick? Help me out, man.
It has nothing to do with the 49ers.
Then why is this a discussion on our Nothing But Niners podcast?
This is a discussion because another person who has nothing to do with the 49ers anymore has not been signed yet.
Uh-oh.
So that's why this is a discussion. And let me put this out there first before we get into this conversation. To all the faithfuls out there, I have absolutely nothing wrong with Colin Kaepernick. Okay? I am just ready to move on from him, from this team. I'm ready for a fresh start. A new regime is here. I'm ready to move forward. And Colin Kaepernick opted out of his contract. Whether you want to sit here and say that Kyle and Lynch are...
That's a good name for them.
Yeah, Kyle Lynch. That's what we'll just start calling him.
Kyle Lynch.
Kyle Lynch, right? Kyle Lynch is bringing it to you. So whether you want to sit here and say Shanahan and Lynch are liars and that they said that they were going to sign Colin Kaepernick and they didn't, that they said that they're putting barriers, you know, up for him to sign elsewhere. None of that is true. The media starts shit. They're looking for things to aggravate and write a piece on. So this is why it bothers everybody, because Blaine Gabbert played and got signed before Colin Kaepernick did, right? So, but let me put it out there. I have nothing against Colin Kaepernick. I am totally for him standing up for injustice. This country needs to be fixed. There's a lot of injustice in this country, and I agree with him not to stand for a flag when justice isn't served for all. So let's just get that out of the way. Just so everybody knows, I am not a Colin Kaepernick hater. I loved what he did for us in 2011, 2012, and a little bit of 2013. I was on the cap train. I was kissing my bicep. I was doing all that because I was a Niner faithful. So he was taking us to where he needed to take us. Unfortunately, we did not get a Super Bowl win with him. Did he help us get to the Super Bowl? Absolutely. Alex Smith as well. But he is being blackballed. I agree with that. But he is no longer a 49er. Okay?
So it has nothing to do with his play?
It doesn't.
You're telling me that Colin Kaepernick isn't a starting quarterback in the NFL anymore strictly because of his political stance. No other reason?
I mean, people would make you want to think that. I'm not going to sit here and say that that's the only reason. I'm going to sit here and say that he needs to be, you know, in a simplified offense. He needs to be in a simplified system. you know, whether it's scheme or whether it's language or what, you know, whatever it may be. Even when he played in Nevada, he was the same type of quarterback. He
I tell dropped you what. Back. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
That's all right. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, let's do this. I will be the pro Colin Kaepernick guy. You will be the anti Colin Kaepernick guy for the sakes of this podcast, okay? Let's do this, and then we don't have to stay on this too long because this is going to be part of the conversation next Saturday when we're doing our roundtable on YouTube, okay? But in the meantime, let's entertain it. I'll be the pro Kaepernick guy. You be the anti Colin Kaepernick guy, okay? So you tell me, you're telling me now that a guy who was in the Super Bowl, who has numerous playoff victories, who has a very good career record, who had 16 touchdowns and 4 interceptions last year, isn't on a team. How do you justify that?
Well, if you look back at Colin Kaepernick's career, okay, and I'm being anti-Colin Kaepernick now because that's what we're doing.
Right,
if
they
you look
get
back
it.
At Colin Kaepernick's career, okay, Colin Kaepernick can... Biggest hurt for him is he cannot read a defense. Okay? We saw that in the Arizona game. Where the Honey Badger came out and said, it's too easy. You know where Colin Kaepernick is going with the football. Why?
But everybody has a bad game and everyone has tendencies on tape.
But this isn't just one game. This is tendencies. Like you just said, it's tendencies. It happens frequently. If you watch, go back and watch Colin Kaepernick, even when we were going to the Super Bowl, he was staring down his receiver the entire time. He never made checks at the line. You can say that it was Jim Harbaugh that wasn't allowing him to do it. You can say whatever. Well, quite frankly, it wasn't because that he just couldn't do it. So, if you look back in...
I hear what you're saying and all, but... Let's be fair here, okay? So Colin Kaepernick came in with Jim Harbaugh. Harbaugh left. He got a new new offensive coordinator in Jeep Chris. Jeep Chris left, and then it was Chip Kelly. I mean, this guy has gone through 3 systems in as many years. I mean, doesn't that have something to do with it? You're going to fault him for that?
No, because he was in the same system for 3 years under Jim Harbaugh and declined every year.
I mean... There was a Super Bowl year and then NFC Championship game. I mean, if you call that declining, then sure. I mean, look at 2000.
When Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman decided to change the offense and try to make Colin Kaepernick a drop-back quarterback, a pocket-passing quarterback, did he decline?
Well, look at the weapons. I mean, people were leaving. You can't sit here and just blame it all on one person. There were other reasons as to why the team declined. The weapons, like, who did he have?
Absolutely, he could decline. Vernon Davis declined. Michael Crabtree declined.
But then that year, they led the league in drops. Crabtree and Bolden, they led the league in drops that year. You can't put it all on Colin Kaepernick.
I'm not saying that it's all Colin Kaepernick's fault. I'm just saying that, for the sake of this podcast, that Colin Kaepernick wasn't the same Colin Kaepernick that he was in 2012 because defenses figured him out. They figured the offensive scheme out. They figured that you're going to put a spy on Colin Kaepernick and you're going to hit the Colin Kaepernick whether he has the ball or not just because of the fear of him running. You know?
I hear you. I mean, look. So you're saying that he declined, but that doesn't justify why he hasn't been brought in at least for a workout. And I think that's where we both agree. Whether you're anti-Colin Kaepernick, whether you're pro-Colin Kaepernick, whether you're happy he's gone, whether you're sad he's gone, I think that no matter what side of the fence you're on, I think we all can agree. And Nick, you tell me if I'm wrong here, since you're playing the anti-Cap guy, but I think both sides of the fence agree that he at least should have been brought in for a workout at some point. I don't care what he says his demands are. I want to come in. I want to be the starter. I want $9 million a year, $12 million. I don't care what his demands are. He should at least have been worked out so they can say no. We're not even seeing that.
And if Colin Kaepernick didn't stand for injustice like he did and get the topic started like he did around the NFL and have other players doing the same exact thing, Mike Glennon would not have a job right now Colin Kaepernick would be signed. He is being blackballed. There's no way Mike Glennon makes $14 million a year with Colin Kaepernick there, Blaine Gabbert getting signed with Colin Kaepernick there, and this guy's not even getting a chance. He deserves a second chance in the NFL. Whether he's a starter, a backup, whatever he is, he deserves the second chance.
He deserves a fourth chance, but I get what you're saying.
Well, I mean, just a second chance with another team.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Okay. All right. I'm off it, man. I'm ready to get to our guest. Not for nothing. Yeah. But listen, Faithful, listen, this is what we do want to say. And this is coming from us as a group. This is coming from us as the Nothing But Niners team. All of us, okay? Stop fighting and bickering with each other, guys. I mean, Kaepernick's gone. He's not coming back. Regardless of who you think is at fault for him not being a part of this team, regardless of if you think he's being blackballed or not, let's stop insulting and attacking each other. It is a hideous thing to see this happening on a regular basis over one person who is no longer with this team. It's disheartening. I want to see better from the Faithful out there. Treat each other better than that, guys. We have 31 other teams to hate on. We don't need to hate on ourselves. All right?
Absolutely. All right.
So I think that's enough talking, man. We are about 17 minutes into this. Let's go ahead and get our guest on here. Should we introduce him? You know what? We are going to introduce our guest, okay? What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, let's introduce him.
All right. So you guys are very, very familiar with who he is. If you go to 49ers.com and you look at videos, you will see him there. If you go to the 49ers, 49ers podcast, you will hear him there. Our guest doesn't really need an introduction. In fact, he should be introducing us because I'm sure he probably has a bigger audience than we do. By the way, that probably was a joke.
Yes. A bad joke, but a good joke. True.
This guy needs no introduction, ladies and gentlemen. This is Taylor Price. We're going to be bringing him on.
Nothing But Niners!
Joined now by our special guest, Taylor Price. Taylor, what's going on, man?
Hey, good to be here. Crowd goes wild. I'm excited.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you on here. And I'll be honest with you, man. I'm not sure I've heard you on another podcast other than the 49ers.com and your own TPT podcast. So I want to ask you a ton of personal questions before we even start talking about the team. Okay?
Bring it. Let's do it.
All right, so the first thing I want to ask you is, when you started working for the team, were you already a fan, or was it just a job and then you started liking the team, or are you not a fan of the team at all and you just are used to covering the 49ers?
Man, did you even, like, follow my career there? I don't even think you need to ask that question.
Diehard fan.
Born and raised, went to, like, my first game when I was about 4 or 5 years old. But the one I really remember was, like, the 89 or 90 championship game when Joe Montana got blindsided and messed his shoulder up and opened the door for Steve Young. And then ever since that, went to so many games with Jerry and T.O. and all those great teams. And then Niners were always a part of my life. When I was in college and they were terrible, I would drive to my boy's house that had DirecTV. And we watched the 10 a.m. kickoff, being hungover in college, watching those games. So, legit, always watch the games, always down for the watch a Niner game. So that's what's most exciting about now being with the team. Now I can enjoy a nice cold beverage and watch Niner games like I used to.
Yeah. So, speaking of not being with the team, man, how hard was it, like, sitting there and, like, did you guys ever have to do, like, multiple takes? Did you ever say something you weren't supposed to say? Like, I know you guys can't speak freely because when I listened to the TPT podcast, like, I heard you on with Antoine Bethea, and I heard you say a phrase like shooting the shit, and I was like, he would never say that with 49ers.com. So how different was it? Like, how hard was it for you to, you know, kind of, you know, censor yourself during all that?
I mean, it's not hard. It wasn't hard because you're a professional and you understand that it's a living. And a lot of people don't maybe get that correlation. Like, that's how I got food, paid for my fiance's engagement ring, my rent, you know, traveling, things like that. So that was it's a job. And it's definitely, you have to separate the two where, yes, I am passionate. Yes, I have, like, strong takes and opinions about sports and, like, anybody else. But you are functioning as an employee for a professional company, an entertainment company. So you need to fall in line with the expectations and what happens. And so, yeah, there were times where you'd want to vent or whatever it is, and it happens. It's human nature. But I'm very fortunate and took a lot of pride in being professional and being live on set, whether it was the live shows or Periscopes or whatever it was, and always representing the company in the best way that people... Obviously, people are smart enough to know that it's shifted in how it's presented, but they got a feel of passion that I really cared about what I was doing. Yeah. And I was taking arrows on Twitter and just sort of just being a good company man. And so that wasn't hard to do, but now that it's over, it's I'm not gonna lie, it's nice to just be me, do me, and just have fun like everybody else on these podcasts. Yeah.
Absolutely, man. I mean, there's a lot of freedoms when you're doing your own thing. So again, ladies and gentlemen, we are joined by Taylor Price, the TPT podcast, the Taylor Price Talks podcast. He talks 49ers on there. You guys will hear him with a ton of guests. Very, very good content. You guys should check that out. And one more thing I wanted to ask you, because you're doing this podcast, I know you're not officially with 49ers.com anymore, but the question is, do you feel like you're like freelancing now, or do you still kind of feel like a reporter because of the people that you're getting on to the podcast and things like that?
Yeah, that's a good way. I haven't really thought about classifying my, I guess, designation in this sports media game. I would just say I'm a guy still with a verified Twitter account and a good connection list. Still able to talk to people in the building, guys that worked there, guys that played there. Coaches, etc. So I have a good little Rolodex of names and connections of people, and those relationships never end. I definitely feel fortunate to be there, the time that I was there, and the experiences and the moments and whatnot, and the people really, and the fans too, like people that still are supporting the podcast and talking to me on Twitter. I really appreciate that stuff, and it means a lot. It's not like I just disappeared and fell off and turn my back on, you know, the community of Niner fans and people that ride and die with this team. So, yeah, I would just say that I'm probably just a well-informed fan with some connections in the game, if that makes sense.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so talking about doing that, so when you first started, like, I don't want you to walk us through that first day, like that nervousness or anything like that, but was there anybody you were ever starstruck by?
Good question.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways I could go with that, but you'll always, if you are a Niner fan, you'll always remember the first time you connect with Joe Montana or Jerry Rice. Like, that is just like bucket list. They don't really come around too much. Jerry comes around more than Joe does, but you know, there's odds and ends things that come up where you have to grab a camera and take a picture of some presentation or some charity event or some reason that they're doing something. I mean, the alums come around the facility a lot and do things that people don't always see. They're not always publicized, but that first interaction where it's like you're looking eye to eye with Joe Montana and you shake his hand, you're saying like, "Holy shit! Like that's Tom Brady 20 years ago. Like, you know, whatever. That's the real GOAT." So yeah, you'll always remember those moments and people like current players and all that. I never really consider myself like nervous around them because I was, you know, media trained in college and got to write about James Harden for Slam Magazine and did internships. Wayne Gretzky was the coach at Phoenix Coyotes when I was out there. So
nice.
Did a lot of stuff beforehand. So I wasn't really freaked out about working around professional athletes or anything like that. But when you see the legends, people that really you were raised on them and sort of right. It's instilled in you that these are the idols of the game, not just in the Bay Area, but in the game itself. Very fortunate to have that sort of community of legends that are constantly around the facility. I mean, I had a different appreciation for it. A lot of people that work at the Niners, I mean, there are some local folks, but they don't have that same connection of like, I used to watch you at Candlestick. I used to freeze my ass off and I was really excited to watch you ball out. So. Yeah, man, I can go down the list, but it was I took a lot of pride in telling their stories too.
That's amazing, man. I would pay for that opportunity, and you got paid to be there. So, but while you were there, I want to ask you about your favorite memory, whether it be at Levi's or a Candlestick, but like something that happened, maybe like the change of tide, you know, the team going from 5-11 to 13-3, like just your favorite memory or moment while you were there as an employee.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think ultimately I would just say locker room in Atlanta after the NFC Championship game. I just get chills just even saying that phrase. Like, there were times like, hey, when we beat Detroit in 2011 and Harbaugh kind of punked Jim Schwartz and I had my flip cam and I was sort of showing it to some of the guys on the plane and like everyone's huddled around and then it got passed over to Harbaugh and he was cracking up. And you know, there's times like that where you're like on the plane with the band, like with the fellas, and those moments are really like sort of things you'll never forget. But that ascension to get to that moment where you know, it didn't look good, they were chucking bombs on us, and then all of a sudden Cap and Frank and Crab and Vernon and even Michael James got in the end zone in that one. So it was cool to be a part of that celebration and just see what it meant to a lot of guys that have been paying their dues for a long time. So that was the one for sure.
Yeah, so we talk about the good moment. What was your saddest moment?
I mean, can an entire season, the 2016 season, can that count? I mean, yeah, it's just... Yeah, I would say the toughest one. I mean, obviously I could say the Super Bowl. That was devastating. But the more, I mean, I got the NFC Championship ring and you know, I still have such an appreciation, not only what it meant to get there as a team, but as an employee from the marketing and the digital and the content side, the whole Quest for Six, you know, that was something that we worked on as a department. And Ben Mayberry, who's killing it right now, he left the team this offseason. Shout out to Ben. Working with him and Scott on just the look and feel and creating like a cultural movement, that was like, you know, a really fun time. And so to ride that wave of like Quest for Six and all that support that we got from all the fans, that took us to Seattle. And then when Bowman got hurt and Richard Sherman just talking mad shit about my boy Crabtree, that sort of period of time when you're on the field, you saw the pick. I mean, that was my thing. I got down to the field for the end of the games because I was always looking for observational anecdotes for my reporting or what I was writing. And to just watch Frank Gore sit, you know, hang his head, walk off the field past me, and it just, you kind of a sense that like we weren't going to, it was going to be that much harder to get back to that right. plateau or that level. So that Seattle game was equally, that was the Super Bowl. We lost the Super Bowl, I would say, 3 years in a row. The Kyle Williams stuff, which I love Kyle Williams, but that was a tough game, obviously, against the Giants. The Ravens, Crabtree was held at the goal line. I was right there for that too, like literally standing on the goal line waiting for us to come into the end zone. That didn't happen. And then, of course, the Bowman injury, which just sucked the life out of the team. That was one of the – they'll talk about that game for years to come. When I'm old and gray, we'll talk about that, those slugfests between Harbaugh and Pete Carroll. But unfortunately, they got the best of us. Our coach left, was pushed out the door, however you want to look at it, and now we're running their defense. Doesn't sit well with me one bit.
So while we're talking about that, is the celebration your favorite locker room story that you could share? Is that like the Atlanta celebration?
Well, I mean, they're all some really fun, exciting times to be a part of that. There's definitely tough times. I mean, it's remarkable just how, you know, how much of a toll like a post game is in terms of just like, imagine just getting into like a boxing match and then having all these people in your face wanting to like talk to you about it. So those times when you lose are really painful and quiet and just really tough from a team employee perspective, because you have to be very careful with what you're doing and how it's being perceived and what like you're extracting from that situation. But those times in 2011, when the team was just so hungry to win and so excited to win, and just those who's got a better than us chance and how we were able to get the cameras in there. And that's a big credit to Scott and his relationship with Coach Harbaugh and the trust that they had. You really have to develop that trust from a team employee, from a coaching staff, because if you burn those bridges and you violate that trust, you're not getting invited into the room for those moments. So credit to Scott and our team behind the scenes really working on those relationships. I used to download the music, the practice music for the team and play like, was like DJ for the team. And so like you do all those little things to get those moments on camera, because you know that's what the fans really want, deserve. And just the who's got a better than us chance. I still get chills just thinking about like how dope it was when we would beat the Eagles on the road or the Lions on the road or Just like win these games, like the Steelers at home on Monday Night Football, like all these moments that we never had before up until that point. And then just to hear the guys just like sell out and lose their shit, just yelling nobody. Like there's nothing I've seen more dope than that from just like the feel of being in the locker room after a game.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's what it's all about right there. That's the stuff that us fans, like, we're looking to hear. I can tell you that this is the part that I'm most looking forward to about asking you about. So this is the stuff that's, like, good to me. So I'm going to dig a little deeper, and if you don't want to answer, then that's okay, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Is there a story that you ever wanted to write or report about or just tell someone about, like, in the media, but you weren't allowed to because you were working for the team that you could share with us?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that is key to note, it's like there's different layers to it. And when you are a reporter for the team, it doesn't mean you abandon your sort of journalistic approach. So it's not like I go out there and I just stare at the ground and I make up like what I saw at practice. But you are still looking for, you know, does the guy have a knee brace on? Is he limping? You're still trying to like look for things you would as a reporter because you want to anticipate storylines or things that are happening. So you're always like looking at the game in that way. And there were just times where you would see things that nobody else would see. I saw Kaepernick's pig cop socks last year and didn't report on that. That's just something that you'd be. Ridiculous as a team employee to bring that up, but I was aware of some of that stuff that was happening. I clearly wasn't aware of that until after he made his stance known to Steve Wyche and all that. But those are things that you observe, you recognize, and you handle those things accordingly.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, I get that. You got to use your judgment and, you know, make sure you don't, you know, burn any bridges or anything like that. That makes a lot of sense.
I mean, Caps are quarterback. You know, you didn't want to air him out like that. It's not really like a team employee's place to do that.
Right.
Yeah, no, I get that. And then what about sitting around the locker room of all the years that you were there, what player was like the wildest? Like, who was like the most energetic, or like just one person that would do like the most random stuff? You just never know what you're gonna get when they're walking past you.
There's a couple. I mean, I would say the older name or the older person that would do that was Booby Dixon. You just never knew what to do or expect around him because he was so live and such a live wire type of personality, and so I really enjoyed just sort of seeing Booby D, just integrate himself with the fellas and sort of be that guy after practice when guys were dead tired and Harbaugh was, you know, running them into the ground and all that, which they didn't like at the time, but we were winning games. And so I think they all understood it. And Anthony Dixon handled his situation with great class and, you know, handled that moving on to special teams and just being a guy that really did crazy haircuts and just wild, you know, the whole Tony Montana thing. He was a big part of that. So, big shout out to him. And then that mantle got passed to QP, Quentin Patton, who, as bad as the team was, he was always locker room DJ, passing out, you know, candy and all that. He was a big sweets guy. So I really enjoyed, still have a good relationship with Quentin Patton. And look forward for his career with the Jets, I think. Dude's a good guy. He works hard. So I hope nothing but the best for him.
Absolutely. He was by far like my favorite wide receiver on the team. I just felt like he deserved more of a chance. And we don't want to keep you too much longer. I just have a few more questions and then we'll let you go. I think I hear your fiance in there. Hello from Nothing But Niners. I hope she's okay. So we won't keep you. All right. I know what it's like. But I do want to ask you about your predecessor, Scott Kuechly. Are you still in touch with Scott?
Yeah, Scott and I, we still talk, and you know, he's doing a great job with the Vikings. We saw each other from time to time. Not gonna lie, it was pretty sweet shaking his hand after we beat them week one of 2015. Things went differently for both clubs since that day, but we can say, I can say we went head to head, and I'm 1-0 against him all time. So but we still talk and randomly text from time to time. Things will come up. The draft is really a good barometer of that relationship because you draft 10 plus players every year. It's the two of us, really. We had interns and video guys from time to time, but bare bones in it back in like early OG, like TV 49 days, if anyone remembers that stuff. It was him and I just like physically doing everything and trying to do so much that we were able to eventually climb the rankings and all that in terms of like NFL digital. So much respect to him, man. He's doing great stuff with the Vikings. I would recommend anybody, even if he's a Viking, it's Vikings now, but you still respect what he's doing because they're doing really cool stuff and really innovative content. So big shouts to him.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I mean, that's he was someone that I really enjoyed seeing, and then when you came in afterwards, I was like, that's, you know, like, that's really cool. I really like seeing that kind of stuff. So I just have one more question for you, then I'm going to let Nick finish. But you always end your podcast by asking your guests who they should have come on next. So I want to return the favor. I'm interested in who you think we should have on next, and if it's somebody that we need some special clearances from, maybe you could hook us up. You know, hey, Bob, you know, I know these guys over nothing but Niners. You know, just throwing that out there. You know what I mean?
So you're throwing the Bob Lang card. Yeah, I would say you should get Bob Lang, but Bob Lang should just have his own podcast. I don't think he needs to be a guest. He needs to get in front of a microphone because I think he's a microphone guy. But
really?
Yeah, Bob's not shy. Let's just say that. You get a microphone around Bob, he's not gonna shy away. Oh, man.
I got to get him on then. Yeah. I have to get him on.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think who would be a good podcast guest for you guys. I would throw Scott out there. I think you should hit him up because he's got some good stories on like early, mid 2000 Niners. And he, like me, he grew up in Sacramento. He grew up locally as a fan of the team, but he's got some good early stories on like BY and Spice Adams and Michael Robinson and how they sort of got those early like team player hosted videos out there. So
nice.
I think Scott's down to talk about some Niners stuff back in the day. I think he'd be a good person. I mean, he worked really closely with Harbaugh too, so you get a lot of good Harbaugh stories out of him.
All right, sounds good.
All righty, what do you think of the new regime here that is here now? Do you think the team is headed in the right direction?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look back at just kind of the last few years and you can sort of post-mortem what went wrong, those were just forced arrangements, forced marriages, and that's really hard to win when it's somebody predating somebody else and they're not really on the same level, wavelength, in terms of just that respect. So Balky was here before Harbaugh, and Balky was stuck with Tom Sula, and I don't want to say stuck with, but they tried to do that thing and that didn't work. And then
right.
Chip Kelly was sort of band-aid on that thing. And so all those relationships weren't really carved out in the right way. I really enjoy the story of John Lynch. He used to play for Kyle's dad. And so there's sort of a respect there or common knowledge of two football families, the Lynches and the Shanahans, and the fact that they're coming together. Their moves have been pretty solid. I don't think you can question a lot of the decision-making. And I really like John Lynch's presentation, how he sort of answers questions. You know, he's not abrasive. He's very direct. He's candid. Their forthcomingness is a welcome thing. The fact that he's on Twitter, the fact that, you know, Kyle Shanahan's a little shy with the media, but he doesn't need to be some verbose coach. Just go out there, get your offense rolling, get your quarterback in the mix. I think on the player side, I think they're in good hands. Now it's a matter of can they stay healthy? Can they really coach up some of these young players that they're crafting and hope for the best? So, I think it's going to be a couple years until they get this thing rolling. But I think they have competent football people that like each other, that want to work with each other and want each other to succeed. And they don't really care who gets the credit. And hopefully that's a good marriage that can last.
All right. That sounds about right. And that's what we're all hoping for. We want to see some longevity and some continuity. So
what are your thoughts on the draft and what grade would you give John Lynch and the team this year?
Okay. All right. So thoughts on the draft. A couple of things. I wasn't really too keen on Solomon Thomas because I didn't really hear too much about him until that Sun Bowl. I was really watching the Sun Bowl for more for Trubisky, and Solomon Thomas jumped off the tape. He was in the backfield. He made Mitch Trubisky look bad. So he rushed him throws, got back there. So I was impressed with that game. But when you look at sort of the need of what the Niners, what they were really needing, it was maybe more of a game changer or an impact player. And I don't know if Solomon Thomas, if he's going to be a defensive tackle, is going to be a John Randall or an Aaron Donald, someone who's maybe a little undersized at D tackle. I'm hopeful, you know, I think he's the type of guy that means well and really cares about the game. But, you know, Josh Garnett really has a lot to prove and sort of talked a good game when he got drafted about him mauling people and pancaking people. And we really didn't see much of that with the Niners. So I'm hopeful Solomon Thomas can really bring that sort of physicality and not just talk about it, but be about it. So that's my take on that one. I'm not, you know, doing backflips over that pick, but I understand it. I think it's a safe pick for John Lynch, being that Stanford connections, super clean character, vetted type of guy that can come in and just sort of set the bar high as far as commitment, workouts, locker room leadership, those types of things. So I think that pick checks a lot of boxes, but the real wild card for me is Foster. Love him as a player and personality. I think it's a fun person to cover. I think the fans are going to enjoy just the weird sound bites and kind of off the wall and maybe, you know, playmaking, of course, but hopefully he can keep his act together. I was kind of weirded out a little bit that his draft party is sponsored by a vape company. Just, you know, I don't think he's got the right people around him sort of checking him. And that's what I worry about. Some of these young guys coming in and not really understanding the business of professional football. In one hand, Rashard Robinson definitely didn't seem like he had his act together, but he got right with Keenan Turner and Guy McIntyre, Paris Harrelson. Those guys really mentored him from the team side. So there's hope there. There's a support system for Reuben Foster, but he's really got to listen and not act like he's got all the answers. Being aside, I liked the direction there because the rush defense was just awful and they need upgrades there. They need competition in that front. And if they can't stop you on first and second down, they're going to get picked apart and they won't even have to – their pass defense will never even get tested because they're going to be giving up first downs on base downs. So I liked that from that perspective because you got to win up front. And that was sort of where the draft fell to them in terms of the trade and all that. That looks good for PR. But after that, I wasn't really blown away by any of the picks. Witherspoon, cornerback from Colorado, tall, lanky. It sounded like he was getting worked at the rookie camp. So not too sold on that one. Beathard, I don't know much about him. I understand that he comes from pro style and can run play action fakes and boots and some of the plays that Shanahan likes to do. So we'll see there, but you have to have a big arm. And if you don't have a big arm, you have to really have good timing and anticipation. And, you know, certainly Sean Hill, my boy Sean Hill, has made a career of being quick and smart with the football. So hopefully Beathard can be that type of player. But I don't know much about him, to be honest. I had a kind of a funny thought on my podcast that maybe it was a Jed York pick because Iowa beat Michigan and sort of threw a curveball at Harbaugh. So maybe that was maybe some little shade there, a little motivation. But yeah, the types of stuff I couldn't talk about back then, now I can talk about. So if I want to give a grade for the draft overall, I would say probably a B to a B minus. And you really can't, and I really wouldn't take too much weight on that. That's just more of an instant reaction. A lot of these players, Rashard Robinson's, guys in later rounds that can really step up and become impact starters. That's what you're looking for. If the Niners can get 3 to 4 starters out of this 10-man group, I mean, that'll be huge for them. I don't know much about the tight end, Kittle. Hopefully he's a blocking tight end. At the very least, he can hold the point of attack. Vance McDonald definitely has got all eyes on him because he's being shopped around. So they need someone to step up, and I don't know if Kittle can do that just yet. It's a tough position to play as a rookie. And then on top of that, some of the pass rushers, defensive guys, DJ Jones, and the guy PETA, I can't even want to attempt to say his last name. You know, those are rolls of the dice. I don't know too much about them in terms. I can't sit here and say I'm Mel Kiper, but if they can, you could ultimately judge this. If they have 3 or 4 guys that are contributing, that are part of the rotation on offense and defense, and there's going to definitely be opportunity because right now, 50 guys on the team are brand new. So there's nothing but opportunity for these young guys to play. So my grade's probably a B, but you hold me to if these guys actually play this year. I think that'll be a good sign because of any team in the league, if your rookies are making the roster, you have a bad team. And that's tried and true from Bill Belichick to Trent Baalke. That's like a Bill Parcells-ism. If your rookies are making your team, you have a bad team. So the goal is to draft guys that, and your team is so good they still don't make the team.
Yeah, that makes sense, man. Normally you want to draft to replace some of the veterans who are going to be moving on from the team, not all a bunch of young guys competing and then beating out who's already there. So I get it. You know, and sometimes with a new regime, that's the way that you want to go. You want to get rid of some of the older guys. This is not our guy. And that's actually something that I wanted to ask you about concerning the roster itself. So, I mean, it's like you said, it's going to be really hard to give a full draft grade and all that. We don't know what to expect. I was surprised that they went quarterback as late as they did, and they didn't go pass rusher sooner. But that's neither here nor there. What I wanted to ask you about was, of the veterans that were cut from the team, are there any surprises that you saw, like a Mike Davis or anything like that? I don't know if you were surprised by that, but were there any surprises? And the follow-up with that immediately is going to be, do you think there are going to be any more veterans cut that might shock some of the 49er fans?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's funny because I literally posed that to Cam Inman on my podcast like 2 days ago. So it's fresh in my mind. But I'll give you my take, not his. I'll give you my opinion. In terms of surprise, man, there were so many guys that just got cut. So I can't say all of them surprised me. One that I thought I was curious to see what he could do in the NFL was Aaron Rodgers, because the Niners need and haven't had a viable red zone threat, a big jump ball type receiver, throw it on the back line of the paint, or someone that can go up and just get a fade, you know, that type of player. So I think it's all predicated on two things: how big body receivers are viewed in Kyle Shanahan's offense, and Julio Jones is a freak of nature, so I don't think he needs to be compared to any player of that you know, physical stature. But I thought Aaron Rodgers had some potential. It was unfortunate that he went down with the ACL, and I didn't think that he was going to be ready in time for training camp as possible. But ultimately, a new coaching staff wants these players to be practicing and not working out on the turf and doing rehab work. They need these guys on the field. It's the same if you're a managing of a company. You need all your employees physically engaged, working on the projects. You don't need anyone on vacation time. So that really is the meats and potato of it. Like, I thought Aaron Rodgers is a guy who has a potential skill set that would help this team, because they don't have anyone that tall or that sort of rangy that can go over the middle and catch deep ends and be a red zone threat. But that to me was one that I was kind of bummed at on a personal level too. Really nice guy, very friendly, approachable. And so that way I was a little surprised. The other names that we saw, Davis, DeJuan Harris, I'd say DeJuan Harris maybe more so because they signed him on a contract, and that was a contract that was signed by John Lynch. So that was probably the first player that we've seen John Lynch bring in, sort of vouch for as a GM and be like, peace out, not working with you. So, but that's the name of the game. If a guy's fumbling, Harris had a lot of fumbles last year, wasn't really consistent, had some splash plays here and there, but they never really relied on him or could count on him. He played mostly because of injuries and things being shaky with Carlos Hyde. So I would say Rodgers and Harris are probably pretty surprising of the group. The rest of them, not so much. Mike Davis just never really showed a solid commitment to getting better. And there's just a lot of guys out there that are 5'11", 200 plus pounds that are shifty, can run the football. And you have to sort of commit yourself to the game to a further extent to really distance yourself. Granted, I think him being with Seattle, this whole changeup could be a wake-up call for him and could maybe put his career back on track. I wouldn't give up on him just yet, but he's a guy that really just didn't really stand out for any, like, he was pretty confident at most skill sets, but he wasn't above and beyond at pass catching, running through the tackles. He would run side to side more than north and south. So that one didn't surprise me as much. And then to answer the last part of your question, a name that could be moved on from, you know, I would probably just say Tank or Vance McDonald. I think Vance wouldn't really surprise anyone at this point because of the trading talks. And, you know, Garrett Selleck's a pretty solid tight end. He's a good number 2-3. But maybe this Kittle guy beats out Vance McDonald and they just want to separate that. Because a lot of the times, if a guy's clearly not going to be in the mix or be part of your active 46, you'll cut him in the first 10 days of training camp and hope that he can sign on with another team. It's more of a veteran courtesy. But the other one I would say would be Tank, because he's just been miscasted and not really a great fit for what the Niners were trying to do as a 3-4 defense. And you would think a 4-3 would be better for him. And I know he made a lot of strides last year, and internally, Jason Tarver would rave about him being better at the point of attack against the run. But in this defense, as a 4-3, you need a Michael Bennett, a Frank Clark, a Cliff Averill. You need guys that get up the field in a fast way and really have a quick twitch off the line of scrimmage. And I don't think Tank has that as much. And other thing, too, with Tank is just sort of up and down in terms of his commitment level to the game. So I can't say that I could see him being on the roster. If he is, if he's the lights on for him, great for him. But that draft class he was a part of, it's going to go down as one of the tougher ones in Trent Baalke's resume.
Yeah, definitely. I can agree with that. Yeah, so that's all good insight, and you know, I kind of agree with you on the whole tank thing as well. But touching on another player, and he's somebody that's been on this roster, but we haven't seen much of him. And I'm talking about Will Redmond. What do you think his opportunities are to progress and actually play this year? You've been around him. I know that he didn't play last year, but he did work out with the team a lot. And what is your impression of him?
Yeah, to be honest, I mean, I don't know much about him as a player. I'm on the in the locker room, and the way he sort of carried himself. He's a confident guy. He's quiet. He's not really brat. He's not one of the sort of cocky, outspoken types like a Rashard Robinson. He's more of a chilled Dante Johnson, mellow, just kind of play his game and have his fun, but not really to be brash or, you know, overconfident. So, but on the field, I think one thing we saw him trying to get on the field in training camp, and he did do some work, but he had a knee brace on. He just wasn't fluid in his movement. And the other part too is he's undersized. He's not a big tall guy. I know you have to be more shiftier to play that slot corner. And with Trent and what they were trying to do on defense, they put a high value on slot cornerbacks. They drafted Jimmy Ward to play that position as sort of a starter in 2014. And then with Will Redmond, they wanted to move Ward to cornerback and then have Will Redmond take that spot from him. And so they put a high value on it. And that means that comes a lot of expectation. Being a third round draft pick, you really need to be a key contributor on the team. And I saw last year, he's getting picked on a lot. There's in the preseason games and what practices were. I didn't know if he had the vertical ability to break up passes high up, and some of the things that Jimmy Ward really struggled with last year against Kelvin Benjamin and some of those other players. So that's, I think, the really key to him is, can that knee be stable? Does he have fluid movement? And can he attack the ball? Because, you know, moving side to side and defending is one thing, but being able to defend the ball vertically is something that those slot cornerbacks are really going to be tested. And I think that'll be the key as Will Redmond progresses, is how does he defend the ball up in the air.
Great. Yeah, I totally agree with that. So we'll get some of these other questions in. So I'm just going to follow up with this one, and we already pretty much touched on Solomon Thomas and Will Redmond. So do you see, and I'm just going to end this with the team questions here, but do you see this team as a 6-10 win team in that range? As we stand right now with the improvements that we've done on defense and bringing in Brian Hoyer, who's not a, you know, flashy type quarterback, but he knows Shanahan's system. He has played pretty well in Shanahan's system, and being able to be that bridge quarterback, you know, for the next year or two until either C.J. Beathard or we draft another quarterback comes in. What do you think that the offense will be able to do with that type of quarterback and the offense and the improvements with Pierre Garçon and, you know, Marquise Goodwin and stuff like that?
Yeah, you know, I would love to see the team gets double-digit wins and sneak up on people. But the reality of it is you're changing schemes. It's an entirely new system for the likes of even key guys like Staley and Bowman and Eric Reed. They're still going to have to be learning. So it's not going to be easy for everyone. You are bringing in guys with familiarity with Kyle Shanahan's offense, and that definitely helps the learning curve. It's not like everybody is brand new with it, but ultimately, it's a talent league. You have to have impact players. You have to have a game changer at quarterback, at pass rusher, some of these key positions, and the Niners just don't have that right now. And I could be wrong, totally willing to admit that if that happens, that guys step up and whatnot. But I was banging the drum for Deshaun Watson, and I could be totally wrong. It was just more of a gut feeling watching that championship game. Would have loved to see a star, a personality, someone that the team, the fan base could really sort of rally around and have fun with. But Brian Hoyer is Brian Hoyer. It's as probably bland and safe as quarterback as you can get. So I don't have high expectations for him. I've seen him be confident as a quarterback, and I've also seen him struggle when it was time for him to really throw the ball. The best thing that Brian Hoyer and Kyle Shanahan can root for is a really pissed off, motivated Carlos Hyde, development of that offensive line, Trent Brown and Josh Garnett getting their act together on the right side, and the defense really just being healthy and accountable and really thriving in this new pressure scheme. You have good defense, you have a good running attack. We're not really worried about Brian Hoyer having to throw for 250-plus and three touchdowns and lead two-minute drills. The Niners were at their best when Jim Harbaugh realized that you feed Frank Gore and you let that front seven do its thing, and you would win games ugly, but you were winning games. So in terms of the win-loss record, I think anything at six or above would be coach of the year type accolades for Kyle Shanahan, all things considered. But that schedule is really tough, and I could go down the list, but week one is not a winnable game, and it doesn't get winnable at all until you really start seeing some of those AFC South teams in the third, fourth quarter of the season. So I could be wrong. A lot can happen. Injuries can happen. I've seen teams like the 2011 Harbaugh team really just come together. But, man, you look at the names and sort of the core players, they were together for a handful of years and really rose through the ranks together just to even get to double-digit wins. So it's going to take some time, and that's what I think people need to understand is the reason why they got six-year contracts, why they didn't shoot their gun and get a quarterback early. They're trying to build this thing from a cultural standpoint, and I think they have the understanding from Jed York that the owner's not going to flip the switch on them just because things don't go that great early on.
Right, right. Yeah, and I definitely agree with you. I think, you know, if we can get that six mark win, you know, season this year, that's actually, you know, better than what most of us are probably expecting this year. But I think as the years go along, that, you know, year one, year two, you know, I do believe that this team is going to be going in the right direction as of right now. And Jed has finally stepped up and actually said, you know, is doing what he has said before. You know, we took him accountable. We made him accountable for the things that he's done in the past. And he has definitely moved forward, and he's giving that six-year contract. I mean, he probably had to give that six-year contract because letting, you know, two coaches go each year that they were there for the past 2 years. And, you know, so you got to give that six-year contract up.
Definitely have to pay for past discretion.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
The Niners weren't being looked at too highly, and people were making jokes league-wide about just how the organization was ran. But ultimately, this draft did shed a good light on the organization. They were wise. I will give credit where credit's due to have Peter King paint a beautiful portrait of the function of that front office, how they're working together, how they're collaborating, how they're communicating, how people are owning their sector, draft trades and you know, negotiations and player evaluations and whatnot. So smart move by them. They're definitely trying to be more accountable, forthcoming with the fan base, with the access that they're giving their staff, and especially with Peter King, I think that was a smart play on their part to portray Jed York and all football ops in the best way possible.
All right.
Taylor, man, that's going to do it for us, man. You know, I think that's going to be it. We want to thank you. We want to thank you very much. So for the faithful that are out there listening, we guys want you to check him out. Follow him on Twitter if you don't already, at Taylor Price. And if you haven't subscribed to his podcast, I strongly recommend doing it, Taylor Price Talk. It is excellent. He has great guests, great insight. You guys want to know more about what he thinks about the draft and all. He has already covered that on his podcast. We just wanted to get some insight into the man and what he thought about things in general. So, Taylor, again, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, fellas, it was fun. Anytime you want to recap some games down the road, whatever you want, hit me up. I'm good to talk.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate that.
Nothing. Bye. Niners.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Man, Taylor Price is the man. How could you not like that? Oh, yeah, my God. Man. Once again, man, thank you, Taylor Price, for coming on. If you guys don't follow him already on Twitter, make sure you do so, at Taylor Price. If you don't listen and subscribe already, make sure you check out his podcast, TPT. That does not stand for toilet paper tissue. It stands for Taylor Price Talks. That is an awesome podcast, guys. You get some really good insight here from some old players, some old coaches, Jim Harbaugh. You just get everything on there, so you guys make sure you subscribe and check it out, okay? And I'm sure we'll be able to get Taylor back on here sometime and get some more information from him. So very, very fun interview there. Nick, what'd you think?
Yeah, man. Taylor, you know, once again, like I said, you know, I appreciate you coming on and actually being our first podcast that you've appeared on. Man, that's big, man. You know, he was a great, great guest, and, you know, I loved his instinct and, you know, just learning a little bit about him and his time with the team. and the reasons that he left. And, you know, everything was great, man. I hope you guys enjoyed that, and, you know, as much as I did. And once again, Taylor, I appreciate it, and thanks for the, you know, coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Hopefully we didn't upset his lady too much. We kept him a little longer than we were supposed to, but he was a good sport about it. Hopefully she was too. So listen, man, let's jump into this, all right? So I know we started off talking about Colin Kaepernick, and since that has happened, it appears that Colin Kaepernick has got interest from three teams. And I'm saying this appears because supposedly this came from his advisor. But you know, with Colin Kaepernick, there's always something else. So we hear that he's got interest from three teams from Colin Kaepernick's advisor, but then what's the flip side there, Nick?
Well, Nessa said that, you know, if the advisor is putting this out there, that Colin would know about it, but Colin has no clue of this.
And then she posts up the meme, the dancing guy, why the fuck you lying? So whatever, man. I mean, we don't know what's going on with Colin Kaepernick. Well, this is going to be something that is going to stay on your timelines, people. I mean, like I said, just don't fight about it, all right? There is something else that we want to talk about. So we're going to go ahead and play this first. I want you guys to hear this. And again, this is going to be something else that gets discussed next weekend on the YouTube channel. So guys, check this out, okay?
Another linebacker that a lot of people are talking about and speculating what his future may look like, Navarro Bowman of the 49ers, had a torn Achilles trying to come back from that. He said good things, made rave remarks about Kyle Shanahan and the new regime there with the 49ers, which is good. He'll be an unrestricted free agent in 2022, but he has a pretty big deal right now with the 49ers, so they may be trying to unload that probably.
They're definitely doing that. They're definitely doing that. Tate, they've made it known that if you want him, he's healthy,
yeah,
that they'll be willing to move. I think this, too, I think what fans have to understand is, and this is what we always did in the league, is whenever there's a new coaching staff, and this is an Al Davisism, whenever there's a new coaching staff, you have to always know that the teams that hire new coaches are going to get rid of players because they want different players.
Yeah, they just want a new, it's right. Just turnover.
Now, I don't know about Bowman as just being a new player, but San Francisco is going to clean it. Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, they're going to clear out that roster. Bowman is a guy who's had been a leader in the locker room. He's been part of the team. He had a really good relationship with the old general manager.
No, that's enough. That's enough of that crap. So I'm calling it crap because I honestly just don't believe it. But this was the Ringers podcast with Mike Lombardi and Tate Frazier. And they were talking about Navarro Bowman being on the trade block. And you could hear Mike Lombardi emphatically say that Navarro Bowman is indeed on the trade block and that he knows the 49ers have reached out and made it clear when teams ask about him. When teams ask about him, they say, he's healthy and available. That's what Mike Lombardi is saying that the 49ers have said.
Yeah, and nobody's saying that, you know, Jennifer Lee Chan put out there as well, you know, just because other teams are calling about Navarro Bowman doesn't mean it's on the 49ers. Like, meaning that they're going to get rid of him. People can call around the league and see who's available, who's not available, who's interested in trading, who's not interested in trading. But this is just a far-fetched for some, you know, media attention type thing. You know, I mean, when I first heard this, I was just like, yeah, come on, man. Like, as open as this front office has been with the Vance McDonald trade, I think they would have been the same and had the same openness if this was true about Navarro Bowman. But this front office is excited to have Bowman. They are excited at where he is in his progress, in his rehab, and excited to have him on this team as a leader. And I don't think he's going anywhere.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with everything that you're saying. Listen, I already said how I thought it was risky to go out and publicly say, yeah, we tried the trade Vance and it didn't work. But, you know, there were a couple other players also. Vance isn't the only one. That kind of openness doesn't come across often from a GM, okay? So it was pretty bold to say that. And I don't think if Bowman was one of those guys, they would bite their lip about it, especially because of this, right? So if you're... the team did actually issue a statement that I'm going to read. This is a joint statement from John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. And it says, the report that we have been shopping Navarro Bowman is completely false. From the time we joined the organization, Navarro has been the consummate professional. It is evident he has been working very hard to prepare for the upcoming season, and we have been impressed by what we have already seen on the field. We are looking forward to Navarro's future contributions to this team. I mean, come on, man. That is awesome, right? Let's come on. That's how you squash a rumor. That's how you do it. John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan aren't playing around. This level of transparency is something that is just completely unusual. 49er fans just haven't seen it. Whether you think it's good, whether you think it's bad, we just aren't familiar with it at all. And it's something that's going to take some time to get used to. But hey, I mean, they said, you know, this guy's on the trading block, and they didn't deny it. They said, hey, this guy is not on the trading block. So you got to take him at their word, right? I mean, isn't that what we have to go off of?
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what we have to go off of, man. You know, like you said, whether you like it or you don't like it, you know, we're not used to GMs talking. You know, I'm not going to do my Trent Baalke impersonation because it'll be horrible and it just will make you stop listening. So I'm not going to go there. But I couldn't stand the guy to talk, and I didn't want him to talk. So, but I love that John Lynch talks very professional. He is very open, which could be, you know, bad at some points. And I wasn't, you know, I didn't like that he was so open, you know, with the Vance McDonald trade because of the fact that, you know, where does Vance McDonald think that he stands with this team after being told that he was on the trade block? That's the only reason. But if you're going to have that family-type atmosphere and you're trying to build that and bring that culture back, you have to be open and honest with your players. So they all know it's a business, and, you know, I believe that if something's going to happen, they're going to tell these players, and it's not going to be come to them as a surprise.
Right. And so to Mr. Mike Lombardi and Tate Frazier, we give you... You guys are wrong. Nick has been on one this episode, man. All right, guys, listen, man. I want you guys to make sure you tune in. Keep your eyes peeled. We have some articles coming from the website very soon. We're going to be popping up on YouTube. Maybe do something tomorrow or the day after, but we're not going to do anything on the weekend. So you guys keep your eyes open and keep your ears listening. What? You weren't going to let me get away with it, were you, Nick?
No, I definitely not. Inside joke, people. Inside joke.
It's
people.
All good, man. I can't say the whole eyes open and ears listening. I don't know what it is, but I can't say it. And Nick laughs at me every time. You guys have fun at my expense, okay? Whatever. It's all good. What I do want to say, though, is, guys, if you can do us a favor, if you're enjoying what we're bringing you guys so far, do us a favor. Sign into iTunes, leave us a rating, like us, give us 5 stars, and leave some feedback also, okay? We can definitely use that to boost the ratings. Once the ratings get higher, we can get better guests on. And I think we've done a pretty good job of getting some people on already, and we're just getting started. We already have more guests lined up for next week. We have video guests lined up for the weekend after that. I mean, we are going to keep this ball rolling. We've got the competition coming. Again, if you guys want in on this 49ers trivia, be sure to go to the website and let us know. Get at us on Twitter, whatever it takes, Facebook. Find a way to tell us, hey, I want in, okay? Prizes for everybody. That's right. Prizes for everybody and one grand prize for the winner.
Bring that heat and get that jersey of your choice. Also, you know, Mike, I forgot to say, you know, let people know, you guys can also check us out on TuneIn now.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We're officially up on TuneIn. So TuneIn, iTunes, SoundCloud. I mean, Stitcher is coming soon. Don't you guys worry. We're all over the place, man. If you listen to a podcast on some network, we're going to be there. We're going to work on iHeartRadio and all that stuff, okay? So you guys be on the lookout for us, okay?
Yes, sir. Hey, guys. Thanks for joining in. Hope you enjoyed the Taylor Price podcast. And, you know, let's keep our eyes open, ears peeled, man, because nothing but Niners is coming at you live all the time, man. And I'm going to leave you like we always do. Above all else, stay faithful. We out.
Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat and a red shirt. Now he takes off the shirt. He's running down the middle by the 50. He's at the 30. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. Now he runs the opposite way. He runs at the 50. He runs at the 40. The guy is drunk, but there he goes. The 20. They're chasing him. They're not going to get him. Waving his arms, bare-chested. Somebody stop
that
man.
Look out. Here comes the blue coat.
Oh, Kevin. They got him. Here comes coming the blue coat. The left. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line. Oh. That was the most exciting thing to happen tonight.
I tell you what, that was a great call.